Good evening and welcome back to Sports Talk ATL. I am Chase Earl, joined by Alex Sword. We have a ton to talk about today. Finally, the Atlanta Falcons had their press conference with Raheem Morris. He was hired, it feels like, almost 2 weeks ago. I don't know why it was so long. I really do not know. Maybe it was just because he was moving across the country. But we got a ton of good stuff to talk about there. Terry Fontenot talks about his role with the Falcons in the hiring process, how much Rich McKay was involved, talks about that relationship. Very interesting stuff. And is Zach Robinson the next Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay? Raheem Morris seems to think so. But Alex, I want to talk to you about your initial reactions to Raheem Morris. I feel like if you check on social media, if you check from the Falcons media, it was all positive at Flowery Branch, or they were actually at Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the press conference. What was your initial reaction to just what you saw yesterday?
I think my reaction was the same as everybody's. You know, when the hire was announced, it was met with universal praise among his former colleagues in terms of coaches, players he coached. And I think Falcons fans had the same reaction after his introductory press conference, kind of a reintroduction because he spent so many years here in Atlanta. I had the same takeaway. And I did write a blog about it. Go check it out on the site, sportstalkatl.com, that it just felt like there was a gray cloud over Flowery Branch, or in this case, Mercedes-Benz Stadium, with Arthur Smith. And it was just the way that he interacted with the media and therefore the fans, because the media is kind of an extension of the fans. They act as our mouthpiece, so to speak. And Raheem Morris was the exact opposite. It was all sunshines and rainbows. And granted, this is a results-oriented business, but from the first, you know, the first moments that we get to know our new head coach, it was a resounding success, and from my eyes, it just felt like he wasn't dancing around questions like we knew Arthur Smith to do. He was direct. He was transparent. He radiated, you know, positive energy, which is a breath of fresh air from what, you know, Falcons fans have become used to with an Arthur Smith who kind of gave off that, you know, Bill Belichick-esque, I don't need to answer your questions, and therefore, you know, Falcons fans felt a little bit like, you know, he was treating us like we weren't worth a damn. And I know that's not the case. That's just how Falcons fans took it.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I expected. I mean, I expected Raheem Morris, who's well-liked by players, coaches, everyone, always has a bright attitude. You mentioned the transparency. I thought that was huge. And yeah, it's a stark contrast from Arthur Smith. So I expected him to come in there and nail this press conference, and that's exactly what he did. Now, nailing press conferences is a lot different than winning football games, so I'm not going to sit here. But this is what I expected, and this is what I continue to expect. I mean, people are going to like Raheem Morris every time he gets in front of the mic. That's the case with his players, his coaches. Everybody likes this dude. There's a reason. And you saw that on full display in his opening press conference. If I had to say one thing that he said, and I don't mean to put you on the spot, but one thing that really stood out to you outside of the radiation, something that he said that really stood out to you in that Monday press conference.
He didn't really say it in exactly, but he alluded to or signaled the end of the Desmond Ridder era. And I know that's not exactly groundbreaking news, but there I had to write a blog about it, that Desmond Ridder was not going to be an option in 2024. And the reason why I had to write it is because I saw people on social media, Falcons fans, talking about, you know, what if, playing the what if game, that Zach Robinson is this, you know, godsend. He can, you know, make lemonade out of lemons with Desmond Ridder. And the fact is that is just absolutely not the case. And basically, Raheem Morris, in as many words, basically signaled the end of the Desmond Ridder era, which, you know, again, it's not groundbreaking news, but it's just nice to know the Falcons are going to be in the market for a quarterback upgrade in the coming months.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that stood out, and if you watch the press conference, he said this word collaboration probably 15 to 20 times. And I think the biggest thing about more than anything was just kind of his rapport already that he had with Terry Fontenot. It kind of seemed like those guys knew each other for like 15, 20 years. Like they seemed like best friends. Now, whether they are, or whether that's just, you know, in front of the cameras, who knows? But he talked about Les Snead. He talked about his relationship with Sean McVay, and Raheem Morris said he was jealous of that relationship. And then you see Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot up there on stage. Seems like two guys that are genuinely very excited to work with each other. I think most Falcons fans have a lot of respect for Terry Fontenot. I think they're starting to earn a lot of respect, whether they had it or not, for Raheem Morris. And I think those two guys have a lot of respect for each other. So when we're talking about this black cloud that was over that you mentioned, it's the Rich McKay, it's the Arthur Blank having all this control over football decisions. Well, if Terry Fontenot and Raheem Morris are the guys pulling the strings and they're doing it in this collaborative effort, you kind of feel a little more optimistic about where this team's going compared to where they have been over the last 3 years.
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. It was very evident that the two men, Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot, at least on a surface level, again, they don't know each other that well, are gravitating towards each other. And to kind of expand on that, you know, Raheem Morris basically said he was jealous of Sean McVay's and Les Snead's relationship, how it was just an effortless relationship, how they worked in lockstep, what one needed and the other catered. And when one needed to be picked up, the other one was there. And vice versa. And that's how a head coach and GM relationship should be. Now, with that being said, I do want to preface what I'm about to say that by all accounts, Arthur Smith was a good man and a good head coach in terms of the people who worked with him. You know, Arthur Blank spoke glowingly about him. Players have gone out in public and said great things about him. We know former Falcons players that have nothing but good things to say about Arthur Smith. The fact is on a surface level, from a PR standpoint, which is all Falcons fans have, that's all fans have in general, is PR and kind of what the media, gives us. It was all crap from what the fans said. It didn't look like Arthur Smith was very happy to be there, and it's a stressful job, and Raheem Morris hasn't had many stressful tasks yet. It was just an introduction, but it felt like more free-flowing, and Terry Fontenot is the perfect example of that. I wish we had a picture with him next to, there's that hilarious meme of him and Arthur Blank sitting in the box. I don't remember which game it was, and he just looks absolutely miserable. I think that shows you just how, you know, a presence can impact a organization like Raheem Morris, that just the facial expressions and the way that Fontenot is already just obviously overjoyed to be working with this guy, it speaks volumes about who Raheem Morris is as a person. Again, results oriented right. Business. Let's hold our tongues until we start wins and losses. But
I saw a lot of those takes talking about how he looks so much happier with Raheem and stuff. And I don't know. I don't really put too much weight in it. I can't imagine.
No. That's why I preface with like Arthur Smith is a great guy.
I do think, you know, there's probably a better connection in terms of just like their personalities and stuff like that. Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that, but I don't think Terry Fontenot was disappointed working with Arthur Smith or anything.
No, listen, subconsciously, your face tells me all I need to know.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, I do agree. I mean, like I said, the rapport between him and Raheem Morris was clear as day. Whether it was, you know, things you saw on social media about them talking up there in the press conference, they fed off each other. I thought it was fantastic. I mean, it makes you excited. And one thing, just speaking back to that Les Snead, Sean McVay relationship, I know I brought this up, I think, last week, but I'm telling you, if you haven't found it on Twitter, go look it up. Where him and Sean McVay are talking about drafting Puka Nacua in the fifth round, and you can just see like that made me jealous. I'm not even that big of a football guy. Just the way they had the rapport. Les Snead knew, hey Sean, you got a guy like this. I know you know how to utilize him. And Sean's like, oh yeah, I know how to utilize it. This guy's going to be a star. Obviously, Puka Nacua turns into one of the best rookie wide receivers we've ever seen, and he was taken in the fifth round. So that's the kind of working relationship, if you want to see a demonstration that those two had, that, you know, Terry Fontenot and Raheem Morris are trying to build in Atlanta.
Yeah, just to kind of speak on that as well, you know, some fans might not follow it as closely, but the working relationship is basically Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot, front office coaching staff, and basically they have to communicate each other's needs to one another. And obviously, if you can do that well, the product generally is going to be better. So let's say, you know, Terry Fontenot has, or it would start with Raheem Morris and his coaching staff in terms of, let's say, a quarterback. we need this for the quarterback in terms of what Zach Robinson needs physically, in terms of intangibles. This is what we want as our leader. And then at that point, it's Terry Fontenot and his front office's job to go find several candidates, whether it be free agency, trade, or, you know, in the draft, and saying, these are who we have. This is what we think is worth. And obviously, there's some disconnect with some franchises when those things don't come to fruition. And as you mentioned, when it does work, like in the Rams case, it does work more often than not. Yeah. You see how beautiful it can be.
You wonder if there was disconnect between Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot and Desmond Ridder last year. Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about a big decision that maybe those two guys didn't agree on behind the scenes. You have to wonder. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about Terry Fontenot, who spoke on his role in the hiring process and the whole Rich McKay thing, the things we've been talking about for the last several weeks. He kind of gave some clarity to those situations. One of the most intriguing storylines of the offseason has been the power struggle within the Falcons organizations in regards to Terry Fontenot not being up there at the end of season press conference when they decide to fire Arthur Smith, to finding out that Rich McKay is involved in football operations, to the hiring of Raheem Morris, and then Rich McKay is now no longer involved in football operations, where Terry Fontenot at yesterday's press conferences tried to add a bit of clarity to the situation. He said Rich McKay was not the ones ever making final decisions, right? That was Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot making the final decisions. He also said he was the guy leading the interviews in the hiring process. They did say Arthur Blank had final decision, but it was a collaborative effort. What are your thoughts on these most recent statements from Terry Fontenot?
You believe that? I got some oceanfront property to sell you in Arizona. I mean, this is absolute crap. And I'm trying to compartmentalize the Rich McKay, Arthur Blank facet of the Falcons organization with the Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot, because I love the Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot. I think Terry Fontenot is a great GM. He deserves more responsibility. I'm encouraged by Raheem Morris. I'm optimistic about the direction of this franchise. But there's still a devil on this shoulder, and his name is Arthur Blank and Rich McKay. The fact of the matter is I don't know what this organization has done with those two men leading it that gives Falcons fans any sort of confidence that they're not going to meddle in the business. And I get what Terry Fontenot is trying to do. He's trying to do a little bit of damage control. And here's the facts as I see them. Terry, for one reason or another, was not at the press conference talking about Arthur Smith's termination. Rich McKay, Arthur Blank were obviously received a ton of backlash in the press conference the weeks after that. And then the Rich McKay, you know, Bill Belichick butting heads, that whole thing came out. And then they announced the hiring of Raheem Morris. And then in the very bottom of that press release, Rich McKay is no longer in football operations. So what happened from the time that he was the focal point right next to Arthur Blank talking about Arthur Smith's firing to announcing Raheem Morris's hiring, it's a bunch of malarkey, in my opinion.
Well, especially when you go back and see who they hired in Raheem Morris. I mean, you're talking about a guy that even Raheem Morris said it in this press conference, has now hired him four times throughout his career. So he even said he hired him. So he let us know, like, and it probably let it slip. I bet Arthur Blank was sitting there. I hope he's feeling better. Sick. Yeah. Dang it. Dang it, Raheem. Like, you weren't supposed to say it. You weren't supposed to give that tidbit. We're supposed to not have Rich McKay involved. So he basically said Rich McKay was a big part in him being hired for the fourth time in his career. So Rich McKay's fingerprints are all over this thing. So nothing has changed. And, you know, the Falcons lying to us. They love doing it. A couple
more takeaways I had. You know, Terry Fontenot went on to basically defend Rich McKay, kind of praising him, that he's drafted Hall of Fame players. He's hired Hall of Fame coaches during his time as GM. And that is completely true. Rich McKay does have an impressive resume. The fact of the matter is Terry Fontenot, you are praising the man for his work and him being an invaluable resource to you. Why is he no longer in football operations then, if he's just this invaluable resource? Like Mark Zeno has said it best, the actions do not match the words of what the Falcons are saying. They're doing an entirely different thing. And what's crazy is, yes, Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot and Raheem Morris had and will have final say in all of these things. I am not debating that. But the fact of the matter is, if you're going to deny that Rich McKay and now Arthur Blank, because that's who Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot are reporting to, are not having at least a subconscious impact on the decision-making process, you're absolutely asinine. Because at the very least, Raheem Morris, like Terry Fontenot said, Rich McKay's this invaluable resource, then Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith valued his perspective. So at the very least, it was Arthur Smith and Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot's final decision, but Rich McKay was obviously influencing those decisions. It's wild.
And I think you can go ahead and say that I don't think Terry Fontenot at all had a hand in the firing of Arthur Smith. I think that was definitely Rich McKay. And I think the final decision was Rich McKay and Arthur Blank. I know they'll just say it was Arthur Blank, but we know how that relationship has worked out. It's worked this way for 20 years. I mean, I don't know who the Lord of the Rings character you like to compare him to.
Grima Wormtongue.
You know exactly how that relationship works. And you know, he takes Rich McKay's word. I don't like hit the value he puts into his word. Yeah. I mean, it's gospel. And he's done this for, you know, 10 years now or two decades now.
Yeah, it's quite unfortunate. And listen, I think the overarching picture I'm trying to paint is that at Arthur Smith's firing, that press conference, Terry Fontenot was not there. Rich McKay was the only one sitting next to Arthur Blank. You know, about a month or so passes by and we are introduced to Raheem Morris, and Terry Fontenot is now back in the picture. Oh, yeah, and Rich McKay's out of football operations. Oh, yeah, and Greg Beatles, or maybe not Greg Beatles, I'm sorry, the head guy of Falcons communications with the media goes on. Yeah, Jukes goes out and basically says, you know, does a little PR stuff about how great Raheem Morris was and how the collaboration and how Arthur Blank wasn't, you know, split on the decision. It just all paints a very, like, it's bad politics is what it is. And you said it best. It's not the fact that they're doing these things. It's the fact that they're letting Falcons fans and other media members influencing their decisions. I could swallow the pill if you were like, hey, guys, shut up. Rich McKay is going to be involved. I'd rather you be ignorant and at least be, you know, strong-willed in your ignorance instead of being so easily swayed one way or the other. That's what it's just bad politics.
Well, I mean, it's unlike anything I've ever seen. I mean, the PR that they are trying to control around this, it's truly like, I don't even know how to explain it. I don't know if other teams are like this, but I've never seen anything quite like it, because they seem to clearly be looking to the Falcons fans and listening to what they have to say. I think it might even influence the coaching decision in itself, which is just wild to think that what we are thinking had some sort of factor in play in this coaching decision. And if Jukes was watching this right now, he might send me an email and say, no, it didn't. I promise you it didn't. Well, buddy, why are you even acknowledging me? Who am I? Who am I? I am nobody. I am a talking head. I am a talking head. It's been like this through the entire process. I think that's the most discouraging aspect of the whole thing. It's like, dude, just make the decisions. Like, we're going to talk about them regardless.
Which is crazy, because like I said, to begin this, you know, little rant I have, I'm trying to compartmentalize the fact that I'm optimistic about Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot, both great guys. I love what Terry Fontenot does in the front office. Everything in terms of early returns from Raheem Morris, I'm two thumbs up. There's also the devil on the other shoulder, and his name is Arthur Blank and Rich McKay. So it's hard to be totally optimistic. Cautiously optimistic is what I am.
Yeah, we got to go to break. I want to talk about the leash Raheem Morris is going to have, because I think that's important. After a wild search for the next Falcons head coach that kind of put, as you put it, a cloud over Flowery Branch, it feels like that's been lifted. And at least for now, there is some excitement because of just the glowing smile that is Raheem Morris and all the positive energy he brings and how excited he is to, quote unquote, return home. But that can leave quickly, right? Like, this is a results-oriented business, and the Falcons haven't been to the playoffs in 6 years. They have a good roster, not a fantastic roster. They have a lot of moves that they could make. Obviously, they got to fix the quarterback position. But as we've said, if they do not get the quarterback situation right, it's almost going to be impossible, even in a bad division, to win the division and finally get back to the playoffs, which is all Falcons fans really care about. This drama It's been fun to cover for you and me, but Falcons fans don't care about that. We're ready to win football games. We're ready to get back to the postseason and compete again, which brings me to the question. What kind of leash are you expecting for Raheem Morris to have in this situation? Because I know a lot of people love him, but when you talk about a 7-year postseason drought, and if that continues, all the patience is going to wear thin among this fan base and maybe even Arthur Blank, even if he loves him.
Yeah, I mean, you saw exactly how that can go from, you know, a beloved head coach in Dan Quinn, Super Bowl, brought us back to the playoffs this next year, and he grew out of favor immediately in 2018, immediately pretty much. So I think that, you know, it is wins and losses, and we can all rejoice in the higher right now, but I think Raheem Morris gets it. He's been around this game long enough to know that, you know, you're only as great as what you've done for me recently, you know, and I think that he understands that because he said, we have to win this division. That's the first task. Win the division, get into the playoffs. Once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen. That's what he said. I do think that there is a longer leash than maybe some people might think. Like if we don't make the playoffs this upcoming year, he's not going to get fired because I don't think Arthur Blank wants to. Arthur Blank, as owner, for all his faults, I do think that he gives head coaches enough time to kind of, you know, get their feet into the thick of things in terms of the foundation and build up. Because a lot of teams, like the Raiders, you know, Mark Davis, Al Davis, a lot of other owners are knee-jerky. David Tepper of the Carolina Panthers fired like 4 coaches in as many years. So I do think for all his faults, Arthur Blank will give Raheem Morris time. But then again, like you said, it doesn't matter if it was Bill Belichick, Jesus Christ himself, or Raheem Morris. If they don't figure out this quarterback position, there's going to be no NFC South champion coming to Atlanta. Like, that's just a fact.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any situation where it's like a one-off deal where he gets fired. No. I think they've got to figure out the quarterback position. And I don't even know if that's as much, you know, I think Arthur Smith had a big say in the quarterback position. I don't know how much Raheem Morris is going to have a huge say. What do you think about that?
I do think he's going to have a say. I think it's like you said, it's going to be a collaboration. It's going to be Zach Robinson, Raheem Morris, and Terry Fontenot. And I'm blanking on the assistant GM's name, and Ryan Poles in a room gathering all their information. Kyle Smith, the assistant GM. They're going to be in a room gathering information from their subordinates, the front office, their scouts on the ground, quarterbacks coach, and other assistants in the building, and they're going to take it, and then they're just going to kind of discuss an overarching theme. I did want to say one thing, though. It's not going to be all, you know, happy-go-lucky. You know, Arthur Blank wanted to hire Bill Belichick, the head coach, for a reason. He wanted to win. He's 82 years old. He wanted to win in 2024. He wanted to win right now. So I do think that Raheem Morris is going to have a little bit of a grace period, but it's not going to be, you know, happy-go-lucky, oh, we'll get him next year. Arthur Blank expects to win right now. I think Raheem Morris expects to win right now. The fact is I don't know how realistic that is until I see what they do at the quarterback position.
Yeah, I mean, he was asked that. I think it might even have been Mark Zeno. I don't know who it was who asked the question, but, you know, they asked about the pressure of getting this team back to the playoffs and having an owner that has expectations of being in the playoffs as early as next year. And Raheem Morris basically said, I don't know an owner that doesn't have those kind of expectations. Right. And there is some truth to that. But at the same time, when you have an owner that's 82 years old, wanted to hire Bill Belichick, and you have a fan base that hasn't been to the playoffs in 7 years, it can turn quickly. And it will turn quickly, because as much as there's a lot of people that love Raheem Morris and are willing right now to give him the benefit of the doubt, like it's not like it was
change.
It's not like it was the flashiest hire. It's not like he has this track record of success to back him up. So if he goes out there and goes 4-12 or 4-13, and God forbid, I hope that doesn't happen for Raheem's sake and for our sakes and for the city of Atlanta's sake. I'm just saying that, like, I mean, if he goes 6-11, like if he does worse than Arthur Smith,
you can stop right there. Yeah, you can stop right there. If he does worse than Arthur Smith, there will be questions raised.
Yeah, I mean, I think there will be legitimate questions raised, and I think either Arthur Blank as much
and
as
they're deserving, like, and they're deserving.
Yeah, I totally agree, and that's why I think this is not an easy job, but it looks like he is up for the task. And listen, I don't think anybody in this entire city, like, I feel like there were genuinely people I mean, actually, we know that for the Saints. If you go look at what people were saying at the Saints game, they were rooting for Arthur Smith to fail. I don't think there will ever be a moment among the fan base, among the organization, among the players, that anyone will ever root for this man to fail. And I think, you know, when you get that plays a factor. But like you said, results, results, results.
Like we said in the prior segment, if you missed it, go check it out on the YouTube Sports Talk ATL. The fact is Raheem Morris has already got the fan base in his corner. Like you just said, the fans had turned on Arthur Smith the moment in 2023, the moment when we started losing games. 2022, 2021, there was a grace period, like I mentioned. And 2023, the fan base was ready to turn on Arthur Smith. I don't think that's going to be the case with Raheem Morris for, you know, his energy, the way that he's just a likable guy. Also, he's been with Atlanta. He was with the fans when everyone suffered the worst loss that he described in his career in that Super Bowl. He wants to, you know, kind of make that right, give Arthur Blank that Super Bowl. So I think he's going to have that kind of grace period, at least with the fans.
We got to go to break. I want to talk about Zach Robinson. Great things to say about him. This should be music to the fans of Falcons, especially ones that are around for the Super Bowl collapse of 2016, but more importantly, the rise of the Falcons offense under Kyle Shanahan. We've seen what an offensive guru can add when you have weapons, and we do have weapons. I mean, Drake London, Bijan, obviously we need the quarterback. We do have the weapons, though. And Raheem Morris, at his press conference, likened Zach Robinson, the Falcons' new offensive coordinator, to Sean McVay, a young Sean McVay and a young Kyle Shanahan. Now, that's a high bar. That's like sitting there and saying, yeah, like, you're a Hall of Fame.
The highest bar.
It's literally like comparing someone to Tom Brady before he's ever taken a snap. But if you're Falcons fans, you got to be excited about that. And I don't think Raheem Morris is just putting him on a pedestal without thinking he can handle it.
Right. Raheem Morris spent, you know, 3 years under Sean McVay. He spent more with Kyle Shanahan in Washington, and he also spent time with McVay in Washington, and then again with Shanahan in Atlanta. So if there is somebody who can kind of recognize who the next quote-unquote Shanahan or McVay is, Raheem Morris would be in that inner circle. But the fact is that is a very lofty bar to kind of compare Zach Robinson to. And to your point, it's kind of like the Tom Brady thing where it's like, it's kind of unfair to Zach Robinson. We're getting our hopes up. I don't want to get my hopes up. Like I keep saying, I'm cautiously optimistic. But again, this guy was the hottest offensive coordinator candidate of this hiring cycle. Every single team that had an opening, from the Bears, the Raiders, the Saints, the Bucks, every single team with an offensive coordinator opening wanted to interview Zach Robinson. Zach Robinson turned down the Bears. They immediately hired Shane Waldron, former Seahawks offensive coordinator, because it's now that we know Raheem Morris went into these interviews and basically was like, I'm going to bring in the next great offensive mind with me wherever I go. You can be that team or you cannot be that team. The Falcons, obviously, Arthur Blank was like, ooh, Kyle Shanahan, yeah, I'll take him.
Yeah, I mean, that's a hell of a sales job. I'll tell you that much, especially to a guy like Arthur Blank, who, when you think about the best,
he's pulling on those heartstrings.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, I mean, he's been thinking about 2016 for 7 years, man. And you see it in every one of his moves and the way that he operates and stuff. So, you talk about pulling on that. That's a string that really touches his heart. There's no doubt about it. But, I mean, we'll see. Listen, I think everyone should be thrilled about the hiring of Zach Robinson and excited about what he can bring to the offense, especially since, let's be real, like Arthur Smith, great running game. Like it was kind of fun to pound the rock. But this game's about passing the rock, man. I mean, this is a new era of football. Like, you got to throw the ball to win football games and win Super Bowls. So having a guy that's going to focus on that, and that was the Rams pass game quarterback or coordinator when you had Puka Nacua going off, Cooper Kupp was injured, and still this Rams team that a lot of people expected to win 5 or 6 games had a spectacular offense.
Yeah, I think that obviously Zach Robinson was going to follow Raheem Morris wherever he went if he didn't get the Falcons head coaching gig. But he's got to be excited about what he's coming to in Atlanta. And Raheem Morris said it in his press conference. I don't remember who asked the question. Excuse me. They basically asked what Raheem Morris liked about the Falcons roster. And he said two names. He probably meant to say three. And that's all. He said, oh, that's easy. Drake London. Bijan Robinson. Probably also meant to say Kyle Pitts. But yeah, that's true. I mean, that's three straight top 10 picks.
Oh my God. That Falcons Twitter, I mean, they like to run with things, and so does every fan base. But he didn't say Kyle Pitts, and everyone's like, oh, Kyle Pitts, he's getting traded. As if Raheem Morris has had these conversations before his, yeah, we're going to trade Kyle Pitts. I'm going to come in, we're going to trade Kyle Pitts, the fourth overall pick from 2021. That's my first decision as head coach. No one questioned me. I mean, I mean Falcons fans, fans in general are hilarious. They're always reading into things too much. I'm sure Kyle Pitts just didn't come to mind, but yeah, I mean, those three guys are studs, and you got the eighth overall pick in the draft. I mean, we've talked about it. Adunze is going to be there.
Neighbors
could be there. Hell, you could even trade up. What if you traded up for Marvin Harrison? I saw someone talking about that, and I was like, you know, like if you fall in love with Marvin Harrison,
let me paint this picture. In terms of yak, there's one guy. It's Malik Neighbors. Marvin Harrison, a special prospect. There's no doubt about that. But in terms of after the catch ability, nobody holds a candle to what Malik Neighbors can do. Just imagine in that Cooper Kupp, Puka Nacua, Deebo Samuel slot role where you're taking drag routes, 50, 60. I mean, that is a Malik. This offense is tailor-made for Malik Neighbors to just terrorize defenses out of the slot. And obviously, so we're LSU guys, but
it's such a good contrast to Drake London too. And
yes,
like what he adds. I mean, they're two contrasting wide receivers, and it's fantastic. And then, oh, by the way, you would have Kyle Pitts and Bijan Robinson. Guys, if you can't succeed with that as a quarterback, you need to get out of the league.
Yes,
and you have Zach Robinson calling you plays. A guy who's just
Desmond Ridder might actually be able to resurrect his career if that's the case.
I mean, he might be a competent quarterback after all. Maybe we need to eat our words, but I mean, seriously, bring in anyone with a pulse. And if you have those weapons, you add to the defense through free agency and the rest of the draft. I mean, you've got something to work with here to at least win the NFC South. I mean, give me a break. Coming up after the break, we're going to talk about quarterbacks. A former quarterback, Matt Ryan. Is he a game manager or was he a game manager?
Everybody loves revisionist history, particularly in the sports world. It's about how hot your takes are, and it's forgetting what happened 7 years ago, because Matt Ryan is just getting absolutely dragged in his post-career. I have no idea what anybody's remembering. It started with Pat McAfee a couple weeks ago or a month ago, however long ago, basically saying nobody's ran Kyle Shanahan's offense better than Brock Purdy. Oh, yeah, did we forget Matt Ryan won an MVP in 2016? I guess we did. And then it comes again, which is even worse. This is a CBS host. Let me find his name so we can just drag him for a second. Excuse me. His name is Chris Hassel, CBS sports host with Matt Ryan on the panel and as well as Danny Cannell. Basically, he goes in this big game manager argument that Cam Newton really brought to the forefront of, are you a game changer or are you a game manager? Basically, he was like, the CBS host goes, you know, everybody's describing you guys as game managers. And Danny Cannell stops Matt Ryan. Before Matt Ryan, as humble as can be, he's just the best. He's a humble guy. Danny Cannell goes, I was a game manager. When your coach says, hey, Danny, let's not try and turn the ball over. Or, hey, Danny, we're going to give the defense the ball first. You're a game manager. This man, he points to Matt Ryan, goes, this guy was a league MVP. It's absolutely wild. I am not this Matt Ryan, this big Matt Ryan fan. He's not going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer by any means, like some Falcons fans think. But he's not a scrub. Let's pump the brakes. This guy isn't a game manager. He won an MVP, for gosh sake. If they won that Super Bowl performance would be the greatest Super Bowl performance in NFL history.
Yeah, I mean, that playoff performance would have been the greatest.
Right, yes.
And then you go into what he did during the regular season with Kyle Shanahan, like highest passer rating ever, 38 touchdowns, 7 picks. I mean, the guy was a superstar. And I always say, you know, as much as I know people like to have the conversation about Matt Ryan and Drew Brees, but you get Matt Ryan, Sean Payton for his entire career, go look what those numbers would look like. It would be different. Same thing with Kyle Shanahan. The thing is, he had Dirk Koetter for half his career. He had Steve Sarkisian. You know, it was a different offensive coordinator. And that's what a lot of quarterbacks have to deal with. But the situations matter. And when you look at Matt Ryan over his entire career, who never had a top 10 defense, mostly had, you know, 20 to 32 defenses his entire career, basically had Julio Jones, which is the only player you could say probably on the roster that was ever better than him at any given moment. Maybe like early on his career, you can say something. But during his prime, he was the second best player on the team every single season. So I understand the Cam Newton game manager thing isn't really a slight at a lot of these quarterbacks. So I don't like, I understand he means it a little differently than a lot of people think about it. But yeah, there is a, so there's always been some shade to Matt Ryan. It's Falcons fans that have been dealing with this for two decades.
Well, think about it this way. As Danny Cannell basically said that, you know, if you're a game manager, the defense kind of, you don't want to put your defense in a bad position. Matt Ryan never had that opportunity. The defense never saved Matt Ryan. If Matt Ryan relied on his defense, the Falcons would have never won a football game in his entire career.
No, I mean, they like I said, never had a top 10 defense. I think maybe one year they were borderline top 10 in 2017 when Deion Jones and Keanu Neal and those guys were at their peak. But outside of that, I mean, they were literally a bottom four defense for 15 years. I mean, it's almost incredible to be that bad for 15 straight years. It truly is. But the Falcons found a way to do that, and they never really got them a fair shake. And I mean, I don't know. There's so many games you can point to. I think I saw one on Twitter where it was like 376 yards, 5 incompletions, 4 touchdowns, 0 picks. Oh, Matt Ryan lost this game, by the way. Like that was basically the painted the picture of his career perfectly. I mean, he had spectacular games, game after game.
His own coworker called him a game manager. It's delusional. I have no idea what's going on in this world.
Yeah, I agree with you. Coming up after the break, we're going to get into a little bit of Braves talk to end the show. Their projections for the playoffs are absolutely insane. Baseball prospectus, I think that's how you say it, has an analytics thing called PECOTA. PECOTA. I don't know.
You're having a tough time with this one.
Sorry. It's an analytics thing. They have projected the Braves in the NL East standings, and they have 101 wins for the Atlanta Braves. But I think it's more important, 99.8% chance of making the playoffs before the season even starts. Now, what I think is hilarious about this is this same analytics-driven formula has projected the Braves to finish third more often than not over this stretch where they've won 6 straight NL East titles. So should we be worried? Should we be worried that now they're on the train? Now that they're on the train?
I think they're done eating crow is what they're doing. I think they're like, okay, never mind. This team is the exact same team and then some. And that's the case is the Braves, like we've said, even to begin the offseason, when we're talking about what Alex Anthopoulos needs to do, it's not about making this team better in the regular season. It's about making this team better for the postseason. Because as currently constructed, before the Chris Sale acquisition, before the Jared Kelenic acquisition, before some of the other bullpen acquisition, this team was already a 90-plus win ball club. They're going to walk – now, I don't want to say run away at that point. Now they're going to – looks like it's going to run away with it. But they were going to win the NL East regardless of what Alex Anthopoulos did. And those moves were basically to address issues that arose in October and, you know, beyond.
Yeah, if you go look at FanGraphs projections, which is very similar analytically driven, I think – right as the season ended, before we made a single acquisition, they had us at about 96 to 98 wins, which is just somewhat incredible. Now they also have us over 100 wins, which is as good as the Dodgers are and as many acquisitions as they have made. They're 7 wins behind the Braves. Like, that's how big of a gap between them and the rest of the league. And these things, I do wonder if PECOTA, I don't even want to try to announce the name. I do wonder if they had to go in there and fix some things because the Braves seemingly always outdo their projections.
Yeah, well, I think you know what a computer can't calculate, Chase, and it's for all these dorks who watch baseball, football through an Excel spreadsheet. It's heart. It's chemistry. It's the intangible stuff that a computer can't recognize that the Braves seemingly have in spades. It's that clubhouse presence that Alex Anthopoulos makes such a priority when he's talking about all these acquisitions. That's the difference. Seems very clear to me.
Yeah. I mean, when they were projecting us to finish third, that was something that I harped on, but those teams weren't nearly as talented as the one that they're about to have in 2024. I think this is the most talented Braves team they've had over these last 7 years, which is saying something. I mean, we're talking about a team that just was in the history books last year offensively. Yeah. And they seemingly just got better with the addition of Jared Kelenic and obviously Chris Sale. That rotation is going to be better if they get a healthy Max Fried, if they get a healthy Michael Harris. And I understand injuries are a part of the game and they're going to happen at some point to somebody throughout the season. But you look at that Braves rotation last year and how many injuries they suffered. It was absolutely absurd. And they still won 104 games.
Yeah, it's Bryce Elder stepping up, and that's the case every single season. I'm not going to, you know, project an injury, but the fact is, it's a 26-man roster, and Alex Anthopoulos harps on that. You know, I got to build the best 26-man roster. 10, 11, 12 guys start a game and a season. You have to build depth.
Yeah, pitchers and catchers report next week. I cannot wait to get this season started. That wraps up our show for this evening. Thank you guys for joining us. We will be back with you tomorrow.